Here's what's coming up on today's show.
You know, like there's a lot of great things in here that didn't exist before that can improve your basically financial position, both for younger people and for people that are already retired.
Welcome to the Retirement Cafe with certified financial planners Dan Reese and Brent Oliver. At our cafe, we believe your retirement plan should be life-giving and custom-made, just like a hot cup of coffee. Here in mid-Michigan, with an office in Jackson, the Retirement Cafe is open for business.
Well, hello and welcome in to the Retirement Cafe. Today, we're going to discuss what is in the new Secure Act 2.0, which is part of that massive $1.7 trillion omnibus spending bill that was passed by Congress at the end of 2022. Maybe you didn't hear about it because it was passed kind of last minute, but today we're going to catch you up on that and help you understand the changes for those working and those retired. They're so important, and we want you to make good financial decisions in 2023 and beyond. So understanding this is a great place to start. All right, welcome in, Dan and Brent. Sounds like a massive bill was passed. I've kind of seen a list of a lot of the provisions that are out there. Can you give a little history around the Secure Act 2.0?
Yeah, I know it is massive. Like the thing is that we're going to try to touch on a lot of these things today, but keep in mind, there's so much information yet to come out. So like as we talk on these things, just keep in mind, we're trying to just get the tip of the iceberg, right?
I thought we were going to talk and read all 4,000 pages of the legislation.
We were going to do that, and then we just didn't know if we'd be able to fit it all in. So yeah. We decided, 4,000 pages. But keep in mind, that's the whole bill. And just kind of a little history lesson, like an omnibus bill, basically what they do is they shove a bunch of bills together in one so they can pass them, you know, collectively versus individually. And so this is where you do get a lot of people complaining because they're like the pork, right? Because stuff gets thrown in that you're like, no way would pass on its own.
Right. And well, that's probably the most disappointing thing about all of these. And so the original Secure Act was passed in 2019, and it stands for Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Act.
They must have worked together to come up with that.
That's quite a name. and it is designed in a lot of ways to help families and Americans save for retirement.
Yeah.
And it was very supported, bipartisan support.
Yeah. We've had a huge, this is one actually, I will say, the same thing in 2019 when the original Secure Act was passed. Both parties really worked together on this because it's a known issue that Americans need better options. They need to be able to save more. And I think there's some really good things in here that are really positive, and that's awesome because, at the end of the day, you can only work within the rules that they give you. And so if they expand some of these opportunities, I think it's really going to be helpful. Keeping in mind, it's helpful if you understand it.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to talk about.
And that's not to be negative, but that's part of the issue with it is that there's a lot, and as we talk about this, there's a lot of rules that are complicated instead of just making it like, hey, it's this and it's very simple. It's like, oh, but if this or if that, it's like all these different things. So it's why it's so critically important to be informed to make sure that you're taking advantage of the opportunities because there are quite a few opportunities in the Secure Act 2.0.
Yep. And hopefully we'll be able to kind of open your eyes to some of them today and just get you thinking about it. Cause a lot of it is like, Brent and I talk about, it's not necessarily that you know all this stuff in detail because we don't even. It's very complicated and there's a lot to digest still. It's that you're aware. Like it's kind of like we have clients all the time. They'll come in for a review or something. They'll be like, hey, I heard about XYZ.
Right.
And you're like, oh, that's great. I'm glad you're paying attention to that. This is what it is and this is how it might affect you. So just knowing that some of these things exist are really key to making better choices.
All right, so let's go through some of these here out of the bill again, and we're not going to cover everything today on the podcast, but some of the key changes that you need to be paying attention to and maybe discussing with a financial professional. What's the first area that you want to point out?
Yeah, the first thing is a pretty substantial change, and it's to required minimum distributions, also known as RMDs. So what's an RMD, Brent?
Well, it's from a retirement account. It's a required distribution that you have to take at a set age. So Secure Act 1.0, which increased the age from 70 and a half to 72.
Yeah.
So that's actually a simplification, right? They simplified the process. Secure Act 2.0 has changed that again from 72 to now 73. And then it will increase to 75 in 2033.
Yeah, so they're kind of putting a scale in there. And just so you understand why they do that is because when you look at, like, not that our U.S. government really works with a budget. We'd like to think they do.
Yeah.
But the idea is that, so required minimum distributions, forced income out of retirement accounts, generally are going to create tax revenue for the government. So each year they delay that, it's going to reduce tax revenue temporarily, right? And so that's why you see these phase-ins, so that, you know, over time it increases. But it actually gives you a lot of opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, so this allows for planning opportunities for more Roth conversion strategies to be helpful, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're in that category, or for qualified charitable distributions. So there's a time period from 70 and a half till this period where you can still make those distributions, which is a real opportunity. And we're going to talk more about that in a little bit.
Yeah. The QCDs are great qualified charitable distributions. And a lot of people don't take advantage of those. One of the great things is when it used to be, when those started, they were the same age as the starting RMD, the required minimum distribution, at 70 and a half. And one of the best things that happened when they increased the required minimum distribution age to even to 72 and now above that, they kept the QCD date at 70 and a half. Yeah. So in there, just a real quick note on that. So you do have to be 70 and 6 months before you can do a qualified charitable distribution. It's not the year that you turn that, it's actually when you get that age, which is a big thing. But what else, Brent?
The other thing, the penalty. So if you, let's just say in a particular year that your required minimum distribution was $10,000. Under the old law, you would, if you didn't not take that out in the year that you were required to do so, there's some other things, but we're not going to get into that. Your penalty would be 50%. So your penalty, if you didn't take that, was actually $5,000.
Plus you still owe taxes on it, and you still you still have to take it out. And it's huge. And we always felt like that was a little punitive. I mean, it was very punitive because people do make mistakes because sometimes they didn't know.
Right.
They didn't do it intentionally. Right. They just didn't know.
So they changed that down. It's now 25%. So it's still a pretty big penalty, but it's cut in half.
Yeah.
And then they're going to be, you can, if you make a correction in a specified window, they'll reduce that to 10%.
So yeah.
They're giving some leniency.
Yeah. And I think that whole thing with that window, which I don't quite get, I mean, there's still some language out there we don't fully understand, but I think typically it's like, hey, you go to file your return, you're like, oh shoot, I forgot to take that. If you just take it right away, they're going to allow you to just have a minimal penalty instead of the 25%, which is a great change, right?
Right.
Another one coming up, which is, this has always been kind of a weird thing. So more and more people have Roth options in their 401k, 403b, their qualified plan at work. Used to be no one did. When those were created, it was just pre-tax. Like, you'd put your money in, it was very straightforward. When you took it out, it was taxable. Well, now the Roth option, you're putting in after-tax money, and when you take it out, if you follow all the rules, it's tax-free, right?
Right.
But what was weird is those used to have a required minimum distribution too.
Right.
And they're taking that away.
Yeah. Yeah, which is a good change, right?
Yeah.
So now if you have that and you kept it in your 401k at work, your Roth, you're not going to have that required minimum distribution moving forward, which that begins in 2024.
So
that's the other part that's complicated about this, and is that a lot of the dates on when these go into effect, like some went into effect immediately, some are, you know, we already shared one that was 2023, 2024, so just keep that in mind.
Yeah, they're phased in. And what's interesting, that's always been the case with, like, if you opened a Roth IRA, a traditional Roth IRA on your own, there never were required minimum distributions. And the funny thing that Brent and I used to always kind of ask questions about was, so if you retired and you rolled your Roth 401k, which did have a required distribution at 72 and whatever your age was, and you moved that into a regular Roth IRA, there was none.
Right.
So it's like, what?
Why would you ever keep it there?
Yeah. And I mean, there's rules like, well, maybe you're supposed to keep it separate. But the fact was, it was so complicated, no one understood any of the rules. That's a great simplification. And there's a new one, too, which actually can be pretty powerful if you're substantially different, if there's a substantial difference in age between spouses. So one of the things that they've changed is that if someone passes away and they have a qualified plan like a 401k, and let's say the person that passed away was quite a bit younger than the surviving spouse. So let's say that, you know, Judy was 60 and Frank was 70. So Frank's only a couple of years away from having to take required minimum distributions. Well, if it, typically in the past, when she died, he would take the account and required minimum distributions would then be based on his age. Well, they're going to let you treat that and keep it as a deceased person's account, in essence, so you maintain their starting day age, which is pretty big.
Yeah, like, 10 years in that case where you wouldn't have to take the required minimum distribution that you otherwise would have had to take.
Yeah, and those are things that you do need to know, and that's why we always talk about, this is a great stopping point learning lesson. If you have, we call that money in motion. So money in motion just means you've got a decision to make because there's been some substantial change. This could be a rollover from account at work, somebody passing away, all kinds of things. Anything where money moves, it's really important to talk to a certified financial planner before you do that so that you make sure you're not missing anything.
Absolutely.
Because if you miss that as an example, that could be a really punitive if it's a large account.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to be considering and a lot of big changes and planning opportunities potentially that you want to address with your financial professional. Again, you can always call Avery Wealth at 517-783-1695. And it sounds like there was a change to what is called the catch-up provisions. I've seen a little bit of this. I guess first, remind me, what is a catch-up provision and how did it change in this bill?
So catch-up provisions deal with being able to contribute more money to a certain retirement plan, whether that's a work plan or an IRA or a Roth IRA. There's, once you reach a certain age, you're able to contribute more to that to help people that do need to catch up. Right now, the age at age 50, you're able to contribute $7,500 per year for qualified plans, retirement plans. So that's like a 401k or a 403b, other plans maybe that are offered at your work. And beginning in 2025, people aged 60 to 63 will be able to contribute up to $10,000 per year to those types of plans.
Yeah, and it's funny how they... That's one of the things that we scratch our head about, and I think I've read some people like, they don't get that really. But so it's weird. So 50 to 60, 50 through 59 in essence, you could do the 7,500 in today's dollars. At 60, so 60, 61, 62, and 63, the way we read it,
yeah,
you could put in 10,000 extra over the regular annual limits. We don't know why.
What happens when you're 64? Yeah, like we don't. I mean, that's some of the language is strange. But
yeah, so it's kind of a unique thing. But just know that some of those things are increasing.
Yep. And it's also going to be indexed for inflation moving forward. So that's a real positive.
Yeah.
So as inflation occurs, you'll be able to contribute more and more to that over time.
Yeah, it's funny. You read a lot of things, like a lot of these rules, IRS rules, all that stuff. One great example is taxation of your Social Security income. There's a, it's called provisional income anyway. There's a whole formula for it. Those limits haven't changed in years.
Right.
And like a lot of people will argue, well, that's really unfair. Like any of these limits should be indexed to inflation. Otherwise, you're penalizing people as years go on. So luckily, they're incorporating some of that.
And for IRA, so before we were talking about 401ks, 403bs, so qualified retirement plans. But if you have like an IRA, the catch up at 50 remains 1,000, and it will be indexed for inflation beginning in 2024. So you're going to be able to continue to increase the amount that you contribute to those types of IRAs, Roth IRAs.
Yeah, and for planning, I mean, this can be significant, right? I mean, you start looking at these additional catch ups. Especially because a lot of the 401ks do have Roth options now. And so this is really going to give great opportunities to kind of build like a tax-free bucket of money, which can be so important. You know, Brent and I deal with a lot of people when they get to retirement. And unfortunately, most of them have most of their money in pre-tax accounts. And that just means that none of that money's ever been taxed. So as it comes out, it's all taxed. And so when you can, you know, if you understand anything about the tax tables and how when you make more money, you get into different brackets, having the ability to create income out of a tax-free bucket is huge.
Right.
And so I don't want to sound like Trump there. huge. Like a,
it didn't come to my mind, so I think you're safe. You're safe.
But you know, it really is important, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the only other change that's kind of like we saw, which is if you make more than $145,000 per year, they are starting in 2024. If you're doing that catch up, they're actually going to force you to put that in the Roth bucket.
Yeah.
Which, just so you understand that, it basically forces you to pay taxes on that money today.
Yeah. So, and so there, I mean, you talked a little bit about why that might occur because they want the revenue now, right? Instead of you deferring that, that tax for a long period of time, they're going to force people to pay the tax on it, which is pretty short-sighted from the government standpoint, in my opinion. But hey, you know, they're doing what they need to do, apparently.
Were there any changes included for businesses in Secure Act 2.0?
Yeah, and this is typical, right? What's interesting, they make these changes, and we've already read some about it where it's like, I don't know if businesses are going to be able to implement it that quick.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the changes went into effect right away. And
yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, like that can't happen in a week, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
From when this was, but beginning in, so this one's a little bit farther off. Beginning in 2025, the law requires businesses to have auto enrollment for their employees in 401k or 403b. That's really a positive because it really is going to promote savings. Employees can, of course, opt out, but the automatic rate will be a 3% of their pay. And that can also be adjusted, but I think that's a really positive thing, right? We need people to save. And
yeah. It's been proven that people that auto enroll stay enrolled for the most part. And the thing too, I've read a little bit, I think there's some other stuff coming down the line about more specifics on what's also called, like, they'll have more leeway on what they can start someone at versus three. And then I think there's going to be some auto escalation features, which all that means is like automatically each year it bumps you a percent,
right?
Which again, what's so powerful about it is that if it just is done, people generally just do it.
Yeah. So like in your example, like if they started at 3%, automatically in a year, it's going to go to 4% and then 5% and then 6%. So, I mean, it's just a huge, huge thing.
Yeah. It's path of least resistance. And that's a lot of things with planning, Brent, I talk about. It's like, it's just getting it going. It's just starting it, right? Like a lot of things in life. There's also some really good changes. Like, so traditionally, a lot of smaller companies might use like a simple IRA versus a 401k or might have a SEP IRA plan. And traditionally, those have been pre-tax, right? Matter of fact, I think Brent's working with a client that uses a SEP and they're really happy because they wanted to do the Roth option and they're going to offer that now, right?
Right. So, it's a very positive thing to be able to put away more money in these Roths for people who don't have a retirement plan at work. So it's very positive.
Well, one of the things too, and this is a little secondary benefit of, like, let's say you did have that SEP plan and you put in the full amount, which say it's 25% of your, you know, whatever, we're not going to get into that. But point is like, if you did a pre-tax, great, you save that money. But if you're able to actually fund that with Roth money, you actually are putting in more money, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. And because you're the tax liability.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're getting more money in and it's growing then tax free, so you've just kind of paid your tax bill, and the government no longer owns any portion of that account. So it can be really, really powerful. And also on that same note is that employers for like a 401k or a 403b may choose to offer company match in Roth.
Yeah,
which is a huge change. So just to back up a little bit, when you get a match, those are always in the past are pre-tax dollars, right? And now they're going to be able to move that, if you choose and if your plan offers it, to be a Roth contribution instead. It's going to add that to your income, right? So you're going to have to pay tax on that money. But it's a really good way to get more money into Roth if that's a goal.
Yeah, that is going to be up to the employer. They're not forced to do that. But it's a really interesting thing because, in essence, you're getting a pay raise.
Right.
You know, although you do have taxes due on it, but you're getting a pay raise. And then the other thing that I thought was really interesting is starting in 2024, this is very unique. Like, employers can help employees with student loan payments. So, like, what this says is that, let's say you're working and you've got a student loan. You're like, okay, I have to make a choice, you know, traditionally between putting money in my retirement account or paying down this debt. I really want to pay this debt down, but if I don't put so much money in the retirement plan, I won't get my match.
Right.
So I'm throwing away money, which is painful, right? Well, now what they're going to do, and again, the employer has to be on board with it, but you can take, they can give you credit for your payments to your student loan and then do your match into the retirement plan based on those payments. So yeah. Basically, it's giving you the benefit of the match and you're able to pay that debt down, which I think is cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's great because there are tons, especially people that are new in the workforce that have that decision that they have to make. And it's like, gosh, you know, like I really want to get rid of this debt, but I, you know, everybody only has so many resources. And so it makes it a difficult situation. This hopefully a lot of companies will adopt that.
Yeah, I think it's great.
And then there's another one where companies can add an after tax savings account type option, which is to non highly compensated employees only, but it's an option where
it's
they
for
can
most
put,
people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. $2,500 limit. And then contributions must be eligible for the company match as well.
Yeah, that's really cool because what they're saying is a lot of people struggle. There's downsides with loans on 401k programs because people can use it as a piggy bank, which is not great, right? You want to leave those dollars invested as much as possible. So what they did is they just created this side account. So it's after-tax money, and so basically you're not getting a tax deduction or anything on it, but it's like a little bit of an emergency fund up to $2,500. And when you're funding that, because you can only get it to $2,500, but as you're building that up, which is a good financial practice, then you're still getting your match, just like you would if money going into the regular plan. But if you need it, that money is available on a monthly basis to get at it, which is
without taxes,
with
and
no
penalties
taxes or anything. And it's like, and then you could build it back up, right? If you like used it for something, and I just think that's great because it just gives another way to provide more financial security, for someone.
Well, and I mean, we talk about financial wellness a lot, and I mean that's one of the absolute critical things that every family has to do is you need an emergency fund. This is a very good way to have that emergency fund, have it available without, you know, sacrificing your 401k contribution.
Yep. I think it's great.
Well, a lot of stuff so far that we've gone through, individual and business standpoint, but I know there's a lot in this bill. What else are y'all paying attention to?
Yeah, a few other things we're just going to touch on. One of them is, 529s, which if you don't know what that is, that's basically a college savings plan. And they've been adopted pretty well across, you know, a lot of people use them. But the biggest complaint is what if my kid doesn't use it or doesn't go to college?
And with like a lot of kids are with the student debt crisis, I think a lot of people are more aware of how much it costs to go to college and whether or not it's really worth it. I mean, that's a conversation that I hear a lot with clients and people in the community is just like, I don't think my kid's going to go to college. Like they don't want to go into debt or whatever. And so that's the big problem is that if you set aside a bunch of money in a 529 and then your kid doesn't go to college, it's kind of trapped in that 529.
Yeah.
And so this rule fixes that.
Yeah. And it's kind of, and it's basically a little bit of an advantage. And this is pretty complicated, but the gist of it is that if you've had this long-term 529 more than 15 years, there's going to be ways to move part of that money into a Roth IRA for the same person. So like if you had it for, if your kid was Joe and you had this 529 for Joe and you'd start it when they were a kid and they didn't use it all, or maybe they didn't use it at all because they just decided not to go to college, you're going to be able to, once Joe is working and has earned income, be able to have some ways to move some of those assets from that 529 into their Roth account with no complications, no taxes, anything like that, which is great because, you know, that's going to just be another option. Keeping in mind, the 529 is designed for college, right?
Right.
But what they've done is they've given you a way to at least have more peace of mind. If you fund that, there'll be some options.
Yeah, like if somebody decides to go into the trades or something like that and doesn't incur all the expenses that you would otherwise incur at college, it gives them a chance to move some of that money out, keep it for that same person, move it into a Roth. Like Dan said, they still need income.
Yeah.
Right. So like your child would need to have income and you can only, it looks like contribute a certain amount of the account. So it's not, it's if you had $100,000+, you're not going to just be able to move it into a Roth. That's not what we're saying, but there's some options there.
Yeah. And that starts in 2024. And I will say that one of the things Secure Act, the first one did, is it did expand what you could use some of the 529 money for, trying to be more, holistic, like for trade schools and different things. Right. It used to be strictly very specific of where you could spend that money. So it's gotten better.
And then there's some other additions that allow for penalty-free with retirement withdrawals. So there's a couple different things like recovering from a natural disaster, or dealing with terminal illness, being a victim of domestic abuse. Like, so there's a couple of different things that were added in that allow you to get money so out of your 401k without having to pay that penalty.
Yeah, and the first one, the natural disasters, they were having every time something happened to put out like pass a bill.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, there was this hurricane down there, so let's allow people to do this. Or, you know, so they tried to kind of take care of that where they didn't have to do that every single time. There is a little bit of an issue with this, and we don't have all the language yet, but basically it's kind of around emergency withdrawals. And just be aware that there's going to be more flexibility, but also I think more accountability. So like if you have a true emergency and need money, it sounds like you're going to be able to get to that. But, you know, like the example used is back to the needing a new PlayStation is not an emergency, right? It's got to legitimately be something where it's affecting your well-being. A couple other things on here, Brent, as well.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about QCD rules. So they're still available once you reach the age of 70 and a half. So like Dan said, it's not the year of 70 and a half, but you have to be over 70 and a half that you're allowed to make contributions from your qualified account or your IRA to a qualified charity.
Yeah.
So directly to them, which is a great opportunity. So like, think about it this way. If you're already giving money to say your church, for example, say you're giving them $10,000 a year, just making up a number, right? You could divert it right out of your IRA, give them, maximize that gift at $10,000, and you don't pay tax on that distribution.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a pretty positive way to help a charity and lower your tax bill at the same time.
Yeah, it's awesome. And they're talking about, which Brent and I don't fully understand it all yet, but like a one-time $50,000 gift, maybe to a donor advised fund. We're getting more specifics on that, but there's some other changes around there. And one of the best ones, and this doesn't affect a lot of people, but it's good they're doing it, back to the indexing. So the limit for qualified charitable distributions has been $100,000 annually per account or per person. They're going to index that now. So it'll grow with inflation, which is never a bad thing.
No,
anytime they can do that stuff.
Well, a long list of things to go through. Again, if you have questions, I encourage you to reach out. I know Dan and Brent would be happy to sit down and discuss any of these planning opportunities, whether or not they fit for you. But you can reach out, averywealth.com, and the phone number is 517-783-1695. And I know there's, you know, we've gone through quite a bit. I'm sure there'll be more details coming in upcoming months, and we'll probably update that here on the show. And I know you'll talk with your clients about that as well. But let's close out this episode by just kind of summarizing everything we've discussed today.
Yeah, I think the big thing is that there's always changes happening. And, you know, we deal with it. We're fortunate, Brent and I, because we're in the loop. We get the stuff, you know, regularly delivered to us, any things that are going on. But that's what makes financial planning a challenge. Is that, and that's why we really suggest you partner with a certified financial planner if possible, because they're going to help you to stay in the loop on these things. And really, by understanding them, it just gives you the opportunity to take advantage of them. You know, like there's a lot of great things in here that didn't exist before that can improve your basically financial position, both for younger people and for people that are already retired. Stuff's complicated. Brent and I talk about these things. We're like, let's talk about what they mean here, right? And we'll call people and say, how are you getting this, to make sure we fully understand it. But just like always, don't ever go out and try to do something or take action just by listening to a podcast like this. Make sure you're always talking to someone that really can understand your specific financial situation before you do that, because sometimes what sounds like a great idea might not be a good action for you to take as a family. The Roth options are getting better and better. Brent and I are huge proponents of Roth savings. The long-term benefits of tax-free growth, they're enormous. You know, and being able to use that over your lifetime and put more and more money in those buckets, can't say enough good things about that. And we're here for you. You guys have questions, you're listening to this stuff, Brent and I are more than able to take a call with you and help answer any questions you have, because we want you to have success and we want you to, you know, have a great, great financial life in retirement. So with that, Ben, been a great show.
Absolutely. We thank you for taking us through this. I know this is an important bill and maybe have been overlooked by some people, so I'm glad we're able to kind of get caught up. But again, any questions, direct them to averywealth.com or you can call Dan and Brent at 517-783-1695. Thank you for listening to the Retirement Cafe. For Dan and Brent, I am Ben George. Take care.
Avery Wealth, Inc. is a registered investment advisor registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Registration as an investment advisor does not imply a certain level of skill or training, and the content of this communication has not been approved or verified by the SEC or by any state securities authority. The information contained in this podcast is intended to provide general information about Avery Wealth and its services. It is not intended to offer investment advice. Investment advice will only be given after a client engages our services by executing the appropriate investment services agreement. Information regarding investment products and services are provided solely to read about our investment philosophy and our strategy. You should not rely on any information provided on our website in making investment decisions. Market data, articles, and other content in this podcast are based on generally available information and are believed to be reliable. Avery Wealth does not guarantee the accuracy of the information contained in this podcast. Avery Wealth will provide all prospective clients with a copy of our current form ADV Part 2A disclosure brochure prior to commencing an advisory relationship. However, at any time, you can view our current form ADV Part 2A at advisorinfo.sec.gov. In addition, you can contact us to request a hard copy.